Hey everyone, it's Michelle Williams, and I love being able to share my story with you on my podcast, Checking In with Michelle Williams, where my guests and I, we get real as we share the ups and downs of our mental health journeys, and I'd love for you to join me. Hey, it's going to be your church and your turn up. So listen to Checking In with Michelle Williams every Tuesday, a part of the Black Effect on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, thanks for downloading the podcast. If you want to listen live, all you have to do is download the iHeartRadio app and search for Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Also, if you want to catch this show on video, be sure to check out Zumo TV, channel 719. That's where you can find Sports Grid's Fantasy Sports Network. Enjoy the show, and thanks so much for listening.
Rise and shine, sports investors. It is another beautiful day in the neighborhood. It is Monday, May 25th, Memorial Day 2020. Let's cock-a-doodle do it. This is the early line right here on Sports Grid. I'm Dane Martinez. He's Kevin Walsh, and we are spending a Memorial Day morning with you, trying to get you a little bit of extra cash. Hey, Kev, how was your weekend? How are you planning to celebrate Memorial Day?
Weekend was great, man. You know what I was doing. You know I was watching.
Only 30 seconds in. We can't have the wool drop.
I mean, listen, when you ask me how my weekend was, are we going to double or nothing? The only thing I'm going to do is, yeah, you got to know where we're going. It was good, man. It was good. And I'm just hopeful that we're going to get, you know, back to normal as we're, you know, sitting around the dinner table and the family. And, you know, everyone's like, man, use a baseball game today. Like, that'd be cool. Just to watch like a baseball game right now. And it's like, yeah, I would like to put a baseball game on in the background that I don't fully pay attention to, but it's there.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think hopeful is the key word, right, of the next couple of weeks and months. We need to be hopeful that eventually, you know, sports will come back. Over the last couple of weeks, Kev, you know, we've been talking about Major League Baseball and Blake Snell and his comments, right, and the idea of they're going to have to go back and forth and figure out how to share the pain. You know, on another show that I do, our good friend Jared Smith, he was saying that he thinks this represents that Major League Baseball is in just a worse labor spot than in other sports. And I cautioned him on that, Kevin. I was like, not so fast. Exactly. All it is, in my opinion, was that we already had a formal proposal, right? It was already at the stage of conversation where there was a formal proposal from, in this case, the owners, and then the players were going to have to agree or have a counter proposal. And this, unfortunately, Kevin, is just par for the course. That's the way things with unions are negotiated, right? And I remember saying to him, and I think I've said it to you, just you watch. When these other sports get to that phase of the negotiation or that phase of the conversation, we're going to start hearing the same thing. Now, baseball, it's a very critical week this week for them to, you know, come to an agreement and hopefully hit, you know, call it July 1st, call it July 4th, so that they can have spring training 2.0 and actually get a relevant season with at least, say, half of the games. But I would say over the weekend, Kev, I've started to hear this in other sports. And it sounds all nice and rosy, except for what I always say, the devil is in the details. For example, Kevin, in the NHL, okay, we're hearing about potentially a 24-team tournament, right? That would make it, as a Rangers fan, this makes me happy because maybe they'll qualify for this when they wouldn't have qualified for the Stanley Cup playoffs in its, you know, previous format. But again, you know, if you were really looking at the news or you saw the little details on the end, it'd be like, and now this proposal has to get negotiated, or there's other details that still need to be figured out, right? Mm-hmm. I see this in MLS as well. We got word over the weekend they may be viewing something like a World Cup kind of tournament, right? Like a little round robin. They'll have four or six different groups and, you know, then like a knockout stage. Sounds really cool. Sounds like something I'd love to watch. You could put on in the background in the Walsh family dinner table. But then what was the little subtext? What was the little thing after that? Oh, but all of these details will need to be approved by the union. It seems to me that, you know, we're now starting to realize something I said a long time ago, Kev, is that when, you know, this is not an individual sport. When we have unions here, and because there are so many stakeholders, constituencies, you know, perspectives, this is going to take a while for everyone to actually agree on what it looks like to come back.
yes, of course, people are going to have to, you know, sit down and absolutely make sure that all parties are satisfied with whatever the end result is. But I think we're also finding out that baseball found itself in the worst spot of all sports. I think initially I would have told you that, well, you know, baseball, at least they didn't start their season, right? But evidently that's made it harder on them. Like we've constantly talked about how easy this has been for the NFL. They're so far away. They've pretty much been able to wait and not only wait and see, but they've been able to find ways to execute some of their marquee events like the draft and like just dominate with the draft itself. Like the NFL, maybe you could argue, benefited from this in some ways. Whereas, you know, then you look to, you know, what the NBA and the NHL dealt with, where they had so much of their season done.
Right.
Not a lot of conversations surrounding money, right? Like a lot of the situation there is just figuring out and making sure that they have health sorted, but also just trying to see, okay, do we want to some type of
the idea of, hold on, Kevin, because the idea of if they play 18 more regular season games or not, that's not money?
No, of course it is. But the fact that they have the ability to not do it, it shows that they're so far ahead. The fact that it is not like, listen, we are playing at least 5 more games, you're all coming, shows that they are actually at an advantage due to those financial discussions. Now, of course, they'd love to get all of the money, which is why we're talking about playing 70 games so they can hit their minimums, which is more than understandable. But again, the fact that they are even saying like, ah, you know what, maybe we do let the Cavs stay home. You know what, maybe the Kings don't need to come to Orlando does kind of show that, I think, to some degree. Baseball does seemingly have this situation where they're trying to not only figure out what does a league reset look like? Are we playing 80 games? Are we playing 82 games? Are we going to the depths of January? What the hell are we doing here? Oh, also, how am I safe? Am I really going to get fined if I fist bump somebody? Do I really have to sit in the dugout? Do I have to sit up in the stands? What's the plan there? Oh, and by the way, we agreed that we'd take this amount of money, and you're now telling us that that's way too much. We have to take more money again. And baseball's just in – it's not even no man's land. It's a baseball has everything to be figured out, where at least I think for some of the other sports, they're able to be a little bit more singularly focused. Yes, money will still play its factor, but they're able to just, I guess, maneuver a little bit smoother, I guess, than Major League Baseball.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if I fully buy it, Kevin. You know, honestly, like, because we talked about this before, Kevin, right? Once when Blake Snell came out, right, with his comment, and it was about money. He was like, it's not worth the money, right? If he, we even said this, if he, instead of saying about the money, if he led with the idea of the health risk, right? Yeah. How would this maybe be perceived differently? You know, we're talking about, for example, this MLS, which didn't really start its season. There was like one or two games that had already gone down. So they're a somewhat similar boat. And, you know, this new format, this round robin World Cup-esque tournament, we just haven't heard yet about how much of a hit the players are going to take or the front offices are going to take. And remember, there's some new franchises in this sport where this was their inaugural year. I don't know if they can handle the financial hit of not having any home games in their inaugural year. Like, could Austin or Miami just fold up? I just I hear you, and it does look like baseball is kind of behind the eight ball, or like they're not playing nice in the sandbox. And I understand that. My biggest point is just that we haven't gone this far down the path yet with MLS, with the NHL. And those things are going to have to get figured out also at some point. And I'm just saying that, you know, it's, I'm not assuming that it's all going to be, you know, hunky-dory when we get to that point. It just seems like we've been talking about the money in Major League Baseball first. Like, there's going to be a money conversation in the NBA, in the NHL, in MLS. It doesn't just, it's just not as public and not as dirty yet.
I think, though, see, to me, like, when you bring the MLS in, right? But they're obviously in such a different league. Like, no, we're not saying, like, yeah, I don't know if the Cincinnati Reds as a franchise are going to be able to survive. So that's almost its own separate entity of issue that they have to deal with. From the NBA's perspective, like, I've seen Jared Dudley send out tweets about the importance of getting rolling because of how it can impact the salary cap.
Right.
We've heard them talk about how this is going to this can drop the salary cap for the first time in like a decade. The NBA salary cap decreases as opposed to going upwards. So I think they're aware of the financial aspects of these things. But think about how much further along we are in terms of getting dates. Like, we've heard July 15th start date for the NBA. Like,
right. Now, the Spencer Dinwiddie proposal.
Because, yes, Spencer Dinwiddie has taken it upon himself to comment on all NBA stories, which, how the Nets feel, I don't know. How do I feel? Great. Right. I like news.
I'll tell you what, if I'm a betting man, I'll take later than July 15th. How about that?
Sure, but
like,
how
you could say that, but
they're saying within July. So do you think that we get the NBA within July?
I think it's going to be very late July, maybe August 1 even, you know, but who knows? But that's the thing. We haven't gotten to the point where it's like confirmed yet. And then you talk about like
we have them confirming that they're talking to Orlando. Like,
okay.
Like what is the best news that baseball's given us? What's the best, most like, okay, that's a shine of hope.
The proposal about how the divisions would be aligned. That is like, you know, I'm starting to get, for me, it's about how far down the path have we clarified details, right? There's going to be details. There need to be details around money. There need to be details around health, right? Whether that's testing, policy, quarantine, what does that look like, right? And there need to be details about logistics, I think, you know? And so we're not back in any sport, Kevin, until we have like full-on clarity and agreement on all of those details, right? On health details, on logistical details, on financial details. And all I'm saying is that, you know, we realize that there's a financial back and forth in Major League Baseball. You know, I mean, the NHL, for example, 24-team tournament that we're hearing about. Do you know where these bubbles are going to take place? I certainly don't. And it seems like Orlando and Vegas are getting, snatched up pretty quick. So where's left for the NHL to do this 24-team tournament that sounds really, really cool? But the devil is in the details, right? So I'm just saying I don't know exactly how it is going to play out. And I just think baseball is getting something of a bad rap because it's so public that their process for figuring out the details. Meanwhile, I stand to think that sometime this week we're going to hear about other sports having to go back and forth on some of this as well. I'll give you a piece of bright news, though, Kev. We are now 2 weeks out from UFC 249. It happened 2 weeks ago, brother, right? And so the fact that we are now past that 14-day horizon, right, yeah, that has happened, that we know about in quarantining and kind of what is best practice here around this virus, Dana White's kind of in the clear now. UFC 249 has kind of officially gone off, and now, because it's 2 weeks later and we haven't heard of, like, you know, this ref or this commentary or DC or like seven, you know, stagehands got it. It sounds like maybe now we can say they were able to put on an event successfully.
Yeah, no, I think that is true. I do have my questions about how much testing happened post events.
Right.
You know, I do have my questions about that, but no, absolutely. Like I think even considering that there was someone who tested positive who was there in Jacare Souza,
right,
and seemingly was the only person, like they were able to successfully stay away. Now, is that 100% true? Did he potentially pass it on to someone who was asymptomatic? We don't exactly know.
I'm just saying it's a positive proof point. It can be done.
Absolutely.
All right. And what else can be done is Kevin and I can give you all the edge you need right here on Sports Grid. We're off and running. It's the early line on a Memorial Day.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Hey everyone, it's Michelle Williams, and I love being able to share my story with you on my podcast, Checking In with Michelle Williams, where my guests and I get real as we share the ups and downs of our mental health journeys, and I'd love for you to join me. I'm still on my own journey, but I want to be transparent with you because as I was posting all the highlights of my life on social media, I was breaking down. And too many people fall victim to the picture-perfect image of the high life, so I created a space to discuss the good and the bad. We can laugh, man. We gonna learn, and most of all, I hope to inspire you to go on this journey with me to better mental health. This is gonna be your church, your turn-up, and everything in between. So join me on my podcast, Checking In with Michelle Williams, a safe space for every kind of person. Listen to Checking In with Michelle Williams every Tuesday, a part of the Black Effect on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back, everybody, to The Early Line right here on Sports Grid. I'm Dane. He's Kevin. And no, we're not talking about AEW, at least I think in this segment. What we are talking about is other leagues returning to play. I will give you this, Kevin. As I mentioned, UFC and some of these more individual sports that were going on in Florida, you know, for the last few weeks, maybe they are providing a blueprint, right, of how it can be done, you know, and we are past this kind of time horizon, and hopefully we just get better and better, sharpen up the details, and can return to play pretty soon. You know, Kev, I talk about, like, establishing a blueprint.
Yeah.
And that's been the case for the damn NFL the entire time, right? You've talked about this, how they were in their offseason, so they kind of get lucky. They can still conduct, you know, league business. And so free agency, the draft, the schedule release moves the needle for football and sports fans when it's the only game in town. I also believe, and I've said this before, they're able to kind of follow the trend, right? Follow the blueprint, whether it's established by UFC or likely by NHL and Major League Baseball before they come back. And I don't know if you saw this, Kev, but over the weekend, the president of the Players Association, Troy Vincent, okay, comes out and says, not only are they expecting the NFL to go on as scheduled, but get this, Kevin, he is expecting stadiums to be filled with fans for the NFL season. And for me, you know, and we have here some of the quotes right here. It came out and, said this. Here is the quote. Here is the quote from Troy Vincent. Ready? This was on the Brian Mitchell show. We are planning to have full stadiums until the medical community tells us otherwise. Now, remember when we're talking. We're talking about August, September, so there's a lot that can happen here. So we're planning for full stadiums. He goes on, obviously, to kind of like put some caveats in, Kev. Mm-hmm. We also know that we have to plan for half stadiums, three quarters. So we're planning for all of these scenarios. But first and foremost, we're making every effort. The medical community, blah, 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 blah. But there you go, Kev, right? They're able, and I've been saying this to you and anyone who will listen for a while, they're able to talk tough. They can say this is what we expect because they get the benefit, Kevin, of following the established blueprint. Mm-hmm. By the time they hit August for preseason or whatever, guess what? MLS will be happening. Baseball will be happening. NBA will be happening. And they'll already know what the climate is like in this society, what the health regulations are like, what Fauci is saying and the rest. And they'll know if 25% of fans can come in and how do we figure out who those 25% are. You know what I mean? They get to kind of follow the leader here, and they are, in fact, very lucky, in my opinion. And that's why I think Vincent or anybody else in the NFL can kind of talk as though, you know, a glass half full, optimistic kind of way, right? What do you think? You think it's possible, or are they just talking tough now and they know that they're just going to follow wherever conventional wisdom goes?
I don't necessarily think it's talking tough. I think that they're keeping their options open because it is plausible. If you think about it, now, if they put fans in the stands for a preseason game, that would feel like a waste. Maybe it's a test case. I don't know. Well, let's just say that I believe it is September.
But not if there's 10. Already half of a stands filled for this MLS tournament.
Right. It's more so my feeling towards preseason. It's like, okay. Who cares? Okay. There's not going to be a ton of people there, whatever. But let's just go off of September 10th, right? It's supposed to be that first game. Chiefs Texans on a Thursday night football. That is over 3 full months away.
That's right.
3 full months away. That is so long. Like, not only, of course, as you've mentioned, will they allow countless others to go before them, but who knows where we are at that point? Like, maybe we're actually at a point where they say, yeah, you should have fans back. 50%.
Right.
Like, that's great. And again, I will tell you this. I know, like, the wrestling stuff, we joke about it. But in all seriousness, they haven't stopped at once. And they have been somewhat of a test case, I think, for some people to a degree. Because they see kind of what they're doing, this, that, and the third. And
there are two, UFC similarly.
And there are two things I can tell you with both of those companies. The first thing is I will tell you that AEW on the pay-per-view Double or Nothing announced their next big pay-per-view, which is All Out, September 5th. They did not announce a location, though, at all.
I see.
I think that they're hoping maybe they can spring a location on people and get fans there. I think part of the reason they're hoping that, and part of the reason why I don't believe that the NFL is silly for believing what they want, There are confirmed reports that Vince McMahon, very much so, wants fans at SummerSlam.
Right.
Which is, I believe, August 23rd, I think, 22nd, 23rd. Right. Desperately, desperately wants fans there. And if we get to that point, Dane, and they're like, yeah, you can do 50%, Vince will have 50% there.
Right. Maybe 50%. And we'll know. And guess what, though, Kev? So will preseason NFL games then. Because if it's allowed, the owners are not going to, like, you know, look away from the opportunity to make their money. Okay, like it's gonna happen.
The thing is, if you're the NFL though, right? Like, yeah. Let's just say that decision made by Vince is it's not received with a
That's why I'm saying they're gonna be able to follow the blueprint, but also know what the health is, know what the PR response is. You know, they don't get to be they don't ever have to be the trial balloon.
That's what I'm saying.
Know what I mean, right? So whether it's Vince or whether it's Major League Baseball or the MLS, or I've heard from our friend Jared Smith, who does the Morning After. I do In Game Live with him. He's talking about the NSWL or the NWSL, the Women's Soccer League. They may be first to go. Okay, so all I'm saying is that, again, the NFL gets the benefit of following an established blueprint and knowing the considerations, knowing any of the potential backlash that would come. And so I think because they know they're kind of in the driver's seat and have the ability to kind of follow the leader or use the blueprint, as I'm talking about here, they have the ability to say whatever the hell they want right now. Because in their back pocket, know they'll be able to just follow the established blueprint.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. That's a very good point, right? Like, they could say, we will have fans filled 100 capacity.
Right.
We get to
and if
day.
It doesn't happen, it comes to August 1. Yeah, and, MLS is still, we're like, and then they can very easily be like, oh, we're just following the guidance of the medical community. Bang, and it's all good.
And
you know what I mean?
If anybody says, oh, why'd you say that? We wanted to be optimistic, trying to see people hope.
That's what I'm saying. They get to sit pretty.
Now, it is the NFL, though, Dane. So if anybody was going to mess up an unmessable up situation, it sure would be them.
Okay, that's fair.
It's a situation that they shouldn't be able to mess up.
All I'm saying is juxtapose that against what we talk about at the top of the show with Major League Baseball right now, right? Everyone's like, oh, it's a bad look. Oh, this doesn't look good. Because they are first to slosh through these details, Kev. Yeah. You know? The NFL is not going to have to do that. And I think it becomes very, very beneficial for them to let all these other leagues go out there first and also endure the slings and arrows that may come from the public or that don't come from the public. You know, they become the test case as opposed to the NFL. So I do think that that's interesting. You know, one other thing, whenever we see the NFL, if there's fans in the stands or not, you know, we've been talking a lot, Kevin, over the last few shows about kind of the changes to the Rooney Rule, potentially, right? We talked about the idea of pass interference cannot be instantly replayed, right? And this is because we're now in that time of the year where the competition committee meets and they talk about changes to the game. And one of the changes to the game that are out there, I think, is very intriguing, Kevin. I think we should spend some time on it. There has been talk about this before, okay? But the idea of doing away with the onside kick and changing it to a different kind of play. Now, let me outline this one for you, Kev, okay? So what they and the important context is this. 5-10 years ago, let's say, the idea of going for an onside kick, and this is the key, and I know you like this from the numbers and the data of it all, Kev. The onside kick was, in essence, call it a 17% proposition, okay? Teams would convert on the onside kick between 15 and 20% of the time, call it like 17%. Now, if you remember a few years ago, they changed the kickoff rules, Kev, right? So that all the guys on the line of scrimmage can't get that running start, right? And they did that for player safety, right?
Yep.
The violent collisions on the kickoff, they wanted to do away with that. Makes sense. Cool. What they didn't realize is that one of the ripple effects of that was if you don't get the momentum of those guys, then how the hell are they going to get the 10 yards deep and recover the onside kick? It just made it almost impossible. So much so that in the last few years, the onside kick has dropped from like a 17% proposition to more like a 4 or 5% proposition. Teams were not converting onside kicks anymore at all, right? Yeah. And it kind of, in essence, neutered a part of the game. it neutered a part of special teams or at a part of the game. Now, I understand this is not like offense or defense, but hey, think about this. I remember the Saints in the Super Bowl, other important times, you know, the element of surprise. So here's what they're doing, Kev. It looks like they are going to change it to from an onside kick to one offensive play, Kevin. Okay? And that offensive play would, in essence, represent fourth and 15. Mm-hmm. They do it from your own 25-yard line, right? Because you kick off from the 30. It'd have to go 10 yards, right, to be the 40-yard line where it's eligible. So they're going to do fourth and 15 from your own 25-yard line. If you convert, you keep the ball. Keep on going. There's a couple of extra details that I want to push on you and see how you react to. But on its face, what do you think about this? The idea of doing away with the onside kick, putting the offense on the field from your own 25, and I guess they've determined, right, that like I said, it was about a 17% conversion rate. Mm-hmm. They've determined that fourth and 15 gets converted in the NFL at basically the same kind of rate, the same percentage as the old onside kick, right? So they're trying to have fidelity to the value proposition, in essence. Mm-hmm. What do you think about this, Kev?
I guess I'm first pulled somewhat in a pure gambling direction, mainly because
that's
when
right.
the first time I heard about this,
how backdoor covers.
Well, it's not just backdoor covers, though. It's, to me, just overs as a whole. Mm. Because now, so it's fourth and 15, right?
Yeah.
If the team going for it converts, they are at their own 40 or better every single time.
Right.
That's very far down the field. You are very likely going to see points off of that. Now, maybe
but that's where they would have been if they recovered an onside kick.
Right, except they were never recovering onside kicks. Right?
Fair.
Never recovering onside kicks. Now,
you think 15 is, like, easy?
No, it's not easy, but you just said we go from a 5% proposition to a 20%.
Right.
5 in every 100 and 1 in every 5, wildly different.
Right. Remember, the old onside kick before the player safety rules was around that level also, though, was around 15 to 20%. But yeah, you're right. Go ahead.
No doubt. But also, I think you can see an increase because the onside kick was just essentially pointless.
Right.
People weren't actually doing it. Where I think now this is a bit interesting is people might find themselves a little bit more inclined to actually give this a go, where I think this does differ from your onside kick, right, when it's recovered. Right?
Yeah.
Where are we standing at? However, for this scenario, at least I know based around where the Pro Bowl was at, if that's an incomplete pass, the other team can over to 25. That's field goal range. That's locked in points. Unless there's 10 seconds left and we're taking knees, we're getting points. Pretty much if somebody says fourth and 15, I'm going for it, I'm getting points on the board.
Yeah, absolutely. This is really interesting. We're going to talk about this more because I think there's betting implications and, you know, strategy implications here. And we'll cover them when we come back. It's In-Game Live, off and running, giving you the edge here on Sports Grid.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Have you written a book and need some insight into what comes next?
Or are you passionate about cooking and want to know how to make it your career?
Or maybe you just want to hear insider stories about the entertainment industry. Either way, we've got you covered with the Two Guys from Hollywood podcast. I'm Alan Nevins, a literary agent and talent manager.
And I'm Joey Santos, a columnist and celebrity chef. And on our podcast, Two Guys from Hollywood, we bring our expertise to the table with, of course, delicious cocktails and all kinds of recipes for you to try at home.
So grab a drink and join us. We've got a wide range of celebrity guests and Hollywood insiders to discuss pop culture, publishing, and entertainment. And we'll provide you with an unfiltered and sometimes brutally honest show about Hollywood.
As we like to say, we don't dish, we serve.
Listen and follow Two Guys from Hollywood on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. We'll talk at you soon.
All right, everybody, welcome back into the early line on Sports Grid. Kevin and I were discussing the idea of this new onside kick, okay? And I get it. They want to maintain fidelity to kind of the percent of conversion, right, to make it a relevant play. And this is not without precedent, Kevin. You know, I remember a few years back when they were like, yo, the onside, I mean, the extra point is being hit at like 98%. We need to do something about this. Kickers are getting too good. And so they realized, well, if we move back, you know, 5 yards, 10 yards, 15 yards, we want it to be about an 85% proposition. So how far back do we have to move it to make it an 85% proposition? We've tinkered with special teams before, okay? They want, or the NFL had historically, the onside kick as around a 15% proposition. With the changes around player safety, it dramatically decreased. And this is an idea that it seems like is gaining steam to bring this back to about a 15%, 20% chance of happening. Mm. But this time you're putting your offense on the field, Kevin. And guess what? You know, if I asked you to convert a 4th and 15, this is a lot different if you're the Kansas City Chiefs versus if you're the Miami Dolphins versus if you're the Seattle Seahawks. Whereas in the kicking game, it might have been more even, right? Based on your special teams or who, like, there's a big variance, I believe. Like, what's to stop, you know, what's to stop, call it New Orleans, right? Anytime they're down in a game. I know Sean Payton is down for this. I saw him do it in the Super Bowl, for goodness sakes, right? So what about the fact that you're on the offense is on the field and it's no longer a surprise play, Kevin? Mm. You know, your special teams would be out there and then your kicker would just, you know, kick it in a different way or tee it up in a slightly different way. Now your offense is on the field. It's obvious to everyone you're going for this quote-unquote onside kick to keep the ball. What do you think about some of these subtle changes that will happen along with this rule, ripple effects?
Yeah, that's interesting, right? Like, how many 4th and 15 plays does a team have to where, because you're right. Like, they're not going to be able to disguise it, right? Like, they're not going to send the kicker out there. And then Mahomes, like, everyone knows what's going on when it's going on.
Right.
Exactly. Everybody knows what's going on. But how many 4th and 15 plays do you have? I guess the other question becomes, right? So let's just say on average, it's a 20% proposition, right? But if it is for the Chiefs, a 35% proposition.
Or even 23, you know, and then for another team, it's actually a 12% proposition because they got a bad offense.
But, you know, that's on them for having a bad offense, right? Like, at the end of the day, like, if you have a better team, then you're better. Like, that's okay.
Right.
That's okay that a better team is better. Again, like, it's really going to be interesting to figure out how willing they are to risk it, because it is pretty much – now, we know kickers. Like, we just talked about the extra point rules. Lord knows, if you've bet enough football, you've bet on the bets, I have an extra point. And I had a Patriots first quarter total over 6.5 that I laid considerable juice on. Just to watch that damn thing go left after the, you know, Brady scored on the Redskins. Yeah. I don't even want to. Anyway, so to me, like, we know that it's not, but like, if they're starting at 25-yard line, you're giving an NFL offense the ball at their own 25, the minimum they're in field goal distance. Like, it would have to be just some absolute, like, peewee level football to find themselves, like, punting at, as the end result of that possession. To where it's going to be interesting to see how willing they are. Is it a full desperation thing?
Well, that's what an onside kick is, right? It only happens at the end of the game when you're still down.
Right, but the thing is with the onside kick is like, yeah, you've got no chance of getting this. It's like, that's like the feeling of it. But 4th and 15, if the ball, like, is, does it go, like, if you've played Madden before, right?
Yeah.
Like, there are sometimes, like, people with to put the rule in, you're not allowed to go for it on 4th and anything further than, like, 5, because I'm trying to play real football here. Because the thing is, in Madden, 4th and 15's super doable.
Yeah.
Like, if you're
what they're trying to do is they're trying to be led by the data here, Kevin, right?
Yeah.
That's why it's 4th and 15 instead of 4th and 20, instead of 4th and 8, instead of 4th and 11. Because what they're trying to do is get the conversion rate, the value proposition of it, back to what it was before. So, you know, maybe in the Madden world, it would really be 4th and 23, you know, that kind of thing. But they're going by the data, and they've realized, or they've established that 4th and 15, the conversion rate in the NFL is around what it should be for the old onside kick.
Yeah, which is good, but I just don't know if there's any way that they can actually account for all of the variables.
Right. Go
ahead.
Here's another one. In this policy, apparently what I've seen, you would not be allowed to try this if you're winning.
Stupid.
And that's weird, because there was no rule about onside kick. In fact, some of the greatest kind of onside kicks we've seen, like, are catching the other team off guard, right? Or when it's tied, when it's zero, the opening kickoff has been an onside kick before, I've seen, to catch someone off guard, right? So you can only do it while winning. And I think also there's a maximum okay, of only like two times a game you could even attempt this. Because let's say you have a phenomenal offense, right? Yeah. You could just wind up doing this and play keep away on some level, right? So I think this is really, really interesting. But I do want to ask you, I mentioned backdoor covers, right? Are there gambling implications for this? Like, would you be less likely to get a double-digit dog knowing that they have this extra thing in their pocket and you seem to think it's more viable than the old onside kick? Or let's say you're sitting and it's early fourth quarter and you're betting a game in-game live.
Yeah.
And then a team all of a sudden gets an eight-point lead, right? Are you less – or whatever, you know, a less than a two-score lead. Are you less likely because of this new rule – to, you know, shove all in the in-game live markets or in a double-digit spread kind of market? Is this going to give you cause for pause in the betting world?
It gives me pause on everything. It really, like, this to me is not a small change. I think that this changes, like, the everything. I think that this can change how you want to play totals. Like, I think even the key numbers kind of that exist in totals of highs and lows.
Yeah,
like, you
could
just see the whole thing raised up.
Think about the XFL, Kevin. They brought in a rule right to begin the end of the 2 minutes, right, to try to inspire or allow a team to catch up, mm-hmm. right? The stopping of the clock, favoring the offense, favoring the comeback, right? And we thought that would boost up totals in the same kind of way.
Right. And, I mean, obviously the XFL's quality of play, sometimes the totals, right, it didn't necessarily play out that way. I just think it's really difficult for me to look at a situation now because – You can sit there, right, during an in-game live, Dane, and ask whoever you're on with and say, all right, do you think that they should kick it deep or should they go for the onside kick, right? Like, that's the question that we'd ask.
Right.
And the thing is, right, our idea was always, all right, if they kick it deep, they have this much
time. 3.5 minutes to go. The team just scored to get to within five.
Exactly.
Okay? And they have two timeouts left remaining. When that show goes to commercial break on in-game live, that is the exact conversation we're having, right?
Right.
How does that change now, Kev?
I don't – like, the thing is, I don't know because to me, I think the willingness for an onside kick now is so much greater under this new rule that we're not just asking it at the end of the game desperation mode. It's like, you know, Chiefs are up 14-0. Should they go for the kill shot here? And then, you know, you'll have people
– they're not allowed to when they're winning.
Right, which is, I guess,
it's kind of like what we're seeing, though, is teams are going for a two-point conversion in the second quarter, right, when they just think – they, you know, because that used to be a 50% proposition around the league average, but there were teams who could do that better. So they were like, maybe it's more cost effective for us to just give it a shot. And maybe there'll be teams that do the same thing. You mentioned who has got 4th and 15 plays. Well, maybe some teams will be working on 4th and 15 plays.
Yeah, everyone's going to be working on 4th.
I think you're right. I think it is going to add variance. It's going to cloud the approach of sports investors. And I think in the backdoor cover concept, I think in the live concept, this is gonna have a big impact.
But I would also say, like, this could also go the other way, right? Where a team's like, say a team's getting 10. They just scored a touchdown to now make it a 7-point lead, right? Yeah. And they don't get it. And then the other team kicks that field goal because they start on the 25.
The other team kneels on it.
They might not, though, because this is what we've talked about, though. Onside kicks aren't only happening when the other team's option is kneel.
The last resort,
Like, they might have enough time on the clock to where they have to kick that field goal. Like,
I hear you.
We are talking about a situation that is almost impossible to nail down because now the willingness to do it drastically increases, in my estimation.
No, I agree with you. I think the willingness and appetite to try it, because even if the raw data suggests that they are both 18% chances of success, I feel like I got a shot, you know?
I feel like I can control it so much more than how Gostkowski bounces the ball.
What happens also, like, all right, I'm going to throw a 20-yard pass. I might get pass interference on it. You know,
there are teams that
throw that up purposely, right? They throw it up because two of the three outcomes are good. My guy can come down with it, or I could get some laundry on the field. You know, I think this has the ability to be manipulated in the same way the pass interference replay did, right? When the pass interference replay came out, we didn't expect coaches to throw a challenge to try to generate offensive pass interference, you know? And I think we haven't fully thought through all of the details. For example, how might this affect you, Kevin, on a team's quarterback passing yards prop for a game? You know, like if you're a bad team, okay? You know, I mean, think about it. If you're losing a lot of games, if you lose 16, if you have 16 games in a year, we did the Jaguars, right? We had them going 2-14, I believe. Yeah. Out of those 14 losses, how many times do you think they'll be in an environment where they could try this? Yeah. A few. How many do you think will get converted? I don't know, some, but that's going to add to the fantasy value, the garbage time value, the propositions of certain players. So when I think about quarterbacks and passing yards, I think this has something to do there as well. It's just added to the concept of garbage time production.
Also, for this Jacksonville Jaguars example, right? If you're the Jaguars and you're down 21 with about 7 minutes left, right? And you boom, and you go, and you score that touchdown, and you're now got about 5 minutes left or so, right? 14, most normal cases, we're done here. You have a chance to keep the ball. Right. You have a chance to keep the ball. You're going to now do this. And if they get it, okay, now they have, like, we have a world where the Jaguars keep the football for the last 10 minutes of the fourth quarter.
If they successfully do something that is an 18% proposition, multiple times. Let's not forget, this is trying to happen so that it is the same success rate as what the onside kick used to be. So I don't want to describe this as like a given, right? It's still not going to necessarily happen. I do think there's more variance, though. And I'll trust, like, you know, let me ask you it in this way. We talked about teams like the Chiefs, like the Saints, and how their win total at like 10 and a half or 11 is way too much. But now, remember, in the games where they may lose, unless they're getting blown out, and I don't think those high-end teams are getting blown out a ton, they're going to have this shot, okay? On the four games you think the Chiefs lose or the five games you think the Saints are going to lose, they're going to have this kind of opportunity to get right back in it. So for a team like the Saints or the Chiefs or some of these good offenses, do you think – they'll do it successfully in some of their losses. Does it change that? I got another place it may change. We're going to talk about this a little bit more. We're digging into changing rules potentially in the NFL around special teams. And we'll talk about it some more when we come back. It's the Early Line right here on Sports Grid.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Welcome back into the Early Line here. I'm Dane. He's Kevin. We are giving you the edge, trying to make meaning, read the tea leaves, and see the impact of a changing rule of special teams here around the onside kick. There's proposals out there to do away with the onside kick because, you know, it got converted like three times all last season. Okay. And so the idea of changing it to 15 offensive play that should return the conversion rate back to what it used to be when, you know, those gunners on the edge could get a head start before the player safety changes. Mm-hmm. And we're like kind of looking at some of the differences here. Kevin, largely, I'm with you, right? I think that part of the value of the onside kick was that it was a surprise play that could happen at any point in the game. Now, that's not the case when your offense runs back out onto the field. And you can only do it apparently when you're trailing, which is different than the rules before. I also, you know, Kevin, I don't know how you feel about this, but you know how they always say, it's a great coach speak, that there's three phases of the game, right? Offense, defense, and special teams. Well, no, it's not. You know, like if you're a special teams purist, right?
Does that exist?
I think so. And shouldn't you be then like thinking all offseason, knowing that the guys can't run ahead of time? Shouldn't you be thinking about all new creative ways to onside kick, whether you get a lot of height on it and get the guys running?
Yeah.
Does special teams matter anymore at all? Like, should you really care about hiring your special teams coach?
Yeah, no, you should. I mean, listen, at the end of the day, like, the field goal game is still a part of the special teams, which is massive. Important. I would also give punting its due. I find it's a little, there was a
return game is gone though, bro.
Yeah, and well, the problem is we've come to realize just how damn dangerous it is, and because there are a lot of times where it's just easier to take your fair kicks, like, yeah, and they've done their best to try and pull back on a lot of it, which is understandable. But I still think, you know, fake punts and what have you. Like, we've seen Johnny Hecker end up being a big part of a lot of Rams games, and the field goal game is always going to have its importance. No, nobody is going to sit here and tell you that it's a 33% equal share between all parties involved. But it's still a big piece of the game. And I guess the one thing I could ask is, I'm sure the data backs it up, but it's just, you know, what they saw with eliminating that play in terms of the health benefit for it.
Right.
Because, like, the easiest solution in terms of a, like, satisfying what they're looking to accomplish here is allowing them to get that running head start. Mm-hmm. But obviously the health risk must clearly not be worth it, which then is understandable. Don't bring it back.
Yeah, but no, absolutely. I agree. And that's why, remember, we even saw the XFL tinker with this, and we thought it was smart, right? They'd have the kickoff, but remember, it looked weird, right? How the two lines of players would be all the way down by where the ball would land, as opposed to giving that running head start. I think it's a good spirit, the idea of, you know, taking out the most violent play in football.
Yeah,
I get it. You know, I just wonder if we've accounted for all the ripple effects that may happen. Like, for example, you know, these teams that are down, they're going to have a chance. Now, will they convert it all the time? How much of an actual value add would it be for your fantasy team or for a DFS quarterback or for a season passing yards total? I'm not so sure. Yeah. But I do know this, you know, that these teams that are losing will have another opportunity. It's almost like another facet of garbage time. So I wanted to look and see, like, are there any, you know, quarterbacks who can benefit from this in the vein of their props or in a DFS value or even in fantasy? You know, are there teams out there that are passing teams that are going to suck that I might get a little bit of an extra benefit from because they're going to have this? And I didn't find it. I was kind of forcing it on some level, but I did stumble upon this. You know, we've been talking about Dak Prescott because of the, you know, the contract and the offer and then Andy Dalton coming in as maybe potentially actually pressure. And I got to thinking, like, is there a universe really where the Red Rifle makes starts for the Cowboys this year? And, like, there's got to be, right? Either by injury or by pressure or who knows and how Jerry's manipulating the story. And then I thought it was interesting. You know, we've said this, that this is like the fork in the road for Dak, right? He's going to have all these weapons. He's either going to perform or, you know, there's going to be calls for the Texas native Andy Dalton to come on in. Do you know, Kevin, that Dak Prescott has the second highest season-long prop total bet for passing yards in the NFL at 4,319.5 yards? And also, that means he is the second choice, Kevin, to lead the league in passing yards. We'll put it up on the screen right now. FanDuel has had props about who leads the league in passing. Mahomes is your favorite at 5-1. Then Dak at +650. Matt Ryan 8-1. Rivers, Brady, Goff, Stafford, Big Ben, Breeze. Familiar names. For me, it was Dak that stood out. One, because of all the drama that's in play, right? Two, because I've been asking you for weeks now, with the pick of CeeDee Lamb, right? I was wondering, are they going to evolve into a passing team? And if you do, then where does that leave Zeke Elliott? I find it very interesting, Kev, that Dak Prescott is the second choice to lead the league in passing, and Zeke Elliott is like the second or third choice to lead the league in rushing. Guess what? Both of those ain't going to happen. So which one, you know, where do you see an edge? We are here on Sports Grid, after all. Where's the edge? I'm putting it all together, and I want to kind of fade Dak and his passing prop. What say you?
Well, I'm trying to figure out where exactly Dak finished last year in terms of total passing yards. But the idea of him being able to finish second feels a little bit risky. Once again, I've mentioned a number of times they were the second best offense by DVOA last year.
Sure.
I understand that they brought in CeeDee Lamb. How much better they're going to be able to get off of that, I'm unsure of. Now, maybe there is this idea that with bringing in CeeDee Lamb, the defense lost some of its talent, so maybe they're going to have to be, you know, playing from behind a little bit more.
Dak Prescott was second in the NFL last year in passing. 4,900 yards, okay? So I give it to you, and they were a big-time offense. I get it.
Mm-hmm.
But which way, like, what fork in the road do they take? You know what I mean? Are they going to be a more dynamic passing offense? Ooh, we paid Amari Cooper. Ooh, we got Lamb now, too.
Yeah.
Or are we going to continue to still feed Zeke?
I mean, I think Zeke has found out that he's not the most important piece of this offense, but I don't think it matters to him. He got paid. They paid him as such.
Right.
Which,
exactly.
Man, that's doubt.
So, one way or the other, this was not a smart allocation of resources.
No. I mean, they've made... Listen, look, they've made countless mistakes, okay? And the fact
so
that,
says the Eagles fan, but go ahead.
I got you. You're the one who said it wasn't a smart allocation.
Oh, you're right. I agree with you.
So
Zeke Elliott was fourth in the NFL in rushing last year with 1,357.
Right. And the thing is, like, they have a very good offense. And I think both of these guys have a relatively high baseline of what they can accomplish. The thing is, I just can't back Dak at that price because what happened last year. That level of volume is not something that we've necessarily seen. And I think for that offense, I don't feel comfortable assuming that they are going to be that elite again. I think they've got all the weaponry in the world. And if you're thinking that Dak is going to play from behind, but I almost would feel like maybe I can get Dak at a decent value price. He is priced as the second favorite. Maybe you could say that that's fair. I can't play him at that price. There's a couple of other guys down the board that I'd rather take a shot on.
And let's find out who those guys are, Kevin. I agree with you. Dak does not represent the value to me. There's way too many kind of questions out there. I understand he has the proof that he can throw at that level. But to me, when you put together all the moves in the offseason, the pressure on the contract, and quite frankly, I believe Andy Dalton will play more than zero games for the Cowboys this year. I just do. You know, the idea of him to get above the second highest prop total, maybe not even in this market, but in the individual, I bet under on Dak just in case Andy Dalton plays. But in this, like, superlative league leader, you know, where do you see value? Of course, Patty Mahomes is the favorite at only 5-1, and okay, that makes sense, but that's not the value. Where do you see the value? I'll give you one, but you give me one first.
It's not, I understand why it's Mahomes, but he hasn't led the league in passing just yet. And, like, if they're going to be up as much as people think, like, I don't like the Mahomes bet very much. The first one I'll give you is Matt Stafford, whose name you did mention. I think that Stafford last year, what he did is very, very underrated. In eight games last year, he was on pace for a 5,000-yard season. On a per-game basis, was only second behind Jameis Winston, who ended up leading the league in yards last year. We believe that that team has some offensive talent, but should defensively not be incredible to where they can be playing from behind. I think Stafford's absolutely worth the shot to lead the league in passing. 12-1, to me, is also a pretty solid price for that.
Yeah, fair enough. I got to tell you, and I know you're going to love this, Carson Wentz intrigues me. He's at 19-1, right? And we talk about that offense. And, you know, for me, when I'm looking at some of these guys, I also want to see a team where the running back does something in the passing game, right? Mm-hmm. Where if that lead running back is also a viable pass-catching weapon, because then I know some chunk of that production is going to still be the passing game. When we utilize the running back, it will still add to the passing yard total of these guys. So I think about Wentz. I think about a Drew Brees with Kamara out of the backfield. You know, I think about teams that have good pass-catching backs that, you know, Christian McCaffrey will take a five-yard bubble screen and go 80, right? And I think you need that element on some level to come in on this passing yards prop.
Yeah, I like it. I think that Wentz has that ability. I think Deshaun Watson, though, is another person that I would take a look at. He's a little bit further down the board. We've talked about Watson and his potential to maybe win the MVP. There's two things that are working in his favor, and maybe a third, if I'm going to pull from your idea that having a pass-catching running back as well, he does fit that mold. One, and again, this is something that I will target when it comes to yards leader, is a bad defense. And I believe that that's what the Texans have, especially in terms
that's
of their secondary.
Jake is proof of 5,000 yards, right? His defense. Exactly. Yep, absolutely.
They were always crazy spot, those Bucks. The other thing that he has going for him is we've talked about this wide receiver core. It's a very weird wide receiver core. It's four verts group, pretty much.
Right. All nine.
Of these guys have averaged over 15 yards per catch in their career. And that's a preposterous number. Like, all of these guys have that potential to, you know, have 20 plus yard catches. This, and if they just commit to that and they focus on that, and then all of a sudden Watson has the chance to lead the league in yards per attempt, and I think he could be one of the guys who throws the most attempts in the league. You look at where he's priced. I love Deshaun Watson, and I'd love to see if they, you know, give us more exact props, because winning is obviously very difficult. Sure. But I feel that, you know, he's going to get himself top 10, top 5, and he's not priced as such on a lot of these books.
Yeah, fair enough. But listen, you know, there's a lot of ways to skin the cat, right? So maybe you like the over on Deshaun Watson, his individual prop, in the same way that I'm fading Dak Prescott and his individual prop. We find it very interesting trying to find you value here on the early line. That'll do it for hour number one. When we come back, we stay in the football realm. A lot of news and notes, signings, buzz from over the weekend. We'll catch you up on all that. And remember, our team-by-team previews continue. Maybe another guy who could lead the league in passing. Drew Brees and the New Orleans Saints are on deck. That's in hour number two of the early line. We'll be giving you the edge right here on Sports Grid. Come on back for hour number two.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Ever wondered how a book gets made into a movie?
Or how to master the art of cooking?
Either way, we've got you covered with the Two Guys from Hollywood podcast. I'm Alan Nevins, a literary agent and talent manager.
And I'm Joey Santos, a columnist and celebrity chef.
On our podcast, we're going to be serving you a fresh perspective of the entertainment industry alongside our favorite celebrity guests.
As we like to say, we don't dish, we serve.
Listen and follow Two Guys from Hollywood on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. We'll talk at you soon.